Not up for getting annihilated by a 300-pound lineman?
No!
Fine by us. Because this college football season, Dr. Pepper's giving away $1 million in tuition. Just go to drpepper.com for a chance to win. Win big. Doctor's orders. No purchase necessary.
This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
College Football Podcast.
Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast for Wednesday, September 16th. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com. Normally, on Wednesdays, I am joined by the one and only Beano Cook, our favorite college football historian and storyteller. Beano, a little under the weather this week, so we're shifting our schedule around. Todd McShay, who usually joins me on Fridays, is sitting to my right here in the studio in the vast ESPN Podcast Center.
Fast it is. I try to do my Beano impersonation, but I just don't know that it'll hold up for 30 minutes. I mean, I can do the
on-ball life football,
yeah. You know, a couple words, but I don't have 40 minutes worth. Yeah. Hopefully my man's feeling better, and I'll continue my utility role here on the College Football Podcast.
Well, I wouldn't say utility role, but yeah, your larynx wouldn't hold up for 30 minutes.
Every team needs a good utility player, you know?
There you go. Well, it gives us the opportunity, since nobody breaks a game down like Todd, to talk in earnest about the game tomorrow night at Landshark Stadium. Georgia Tech, number 14, traveling to number 20, Miami. That's 7:30 on ESPN. Todd, they're already both 1-0 in the Coastal Division of the ACC, so the game's got a little juice.
It's got a lot of juice. I mean, I'm excited about this Miami team. It's a lot like Michigan. Miami and Michigan are the two teams that, coming into the year, you just didn't know what direction. Miami, you know, the fast start against Florida State just gives you excitement about all their young athletes. And now you want to see a little bit of time off preparing for this game if they're able to deal with some success too, because that's part of, you know, building a winning culture in a program is handling success against an in-state rival, Florida State, and being prepared to take on a really good Georgia Tech team. Two things jump out at me in this game, and they're both at the running back position. First of all, Georgia Tech, Clemson did a great job of slowing down Jonathan Dwyer, the ACC player of the year a year ago.
66 yards, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the average, I think, 3.7 yards per carry versus an average of 7 yards per carry all of last year. So a huge job by the Clemson defense. But what happened was they realized by starting to use Dwyer and Anthony Allen, the Louisville transfer, in the backfield at the same time, they can get a lot of defenses to focus on Dwyer, and they were using him on inside runs and pinches and faking the ball and then handing it back off to the outside to Anthony Allen, and that opened up some huge runs for Allen. So I'm going to be watching to see if they continue that game plan, which you would suspect they would if Miami is too focused on Dwyer, and if Miami adjusts and has enough discipline as a young defense to account for both of these backs. On the flip side, the versatility of the running backs for Miami. We saw against Florida State getting Javaris James, Greg Cooper involved in the passing game. And I think the one thing that Mark Whipple, the Miami offensive coordinator, has done for Ja'Cory Harris at quarterback is created mismatches for him. And that's something this program has missed for a while, is that when Harris comes to the line of scrimmage, he now knows where he wants to go the ball. And 7 out of 10 times, it's a mismatch in terms of his athlete being faster and more explosive than the one he's going up against. We saw that with Cooper split out wide, the 24-yard touchdown pass, and Javaris James getting involved as a receiver as well. Georgia Tech gave up big, you know, pass completions to C.J. Spiller and Clemson, the running back position, last week. Can they fix those problems against the Miami team that, as I just said, wants to throw the ball to its running backs?
And Mark Whipple, NFL experience, right. That's a NFL coordinator's gimmick, right, is coming up with the mismatches.
No question. I mean, you live and die off of the mismatches in the NFL, and we're seeing now, you know, it all comes down to that, basically, whether you do it with a triple option or you do it with an Urban Meyer spread offense, getting your guys the ball, your premier athletes the ball in space. And I think Whipple's doing that more for Miami than recent coordinators have done for that program.
Now, is the reason that we talk about mismatches more in the NFL because there are a lot of mismatches inherent in college football every week because of the talent levels?
I think so. And I think in the NFL, too, you know the star players for every team. And, you know Terrell Owens, let's say, you have a tendency to watch those. Whereas college football, there are just so many teams and so many guys that, you know, it's hard to focus in on those. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of zone coverage. You know, team defense is knowing that they don't have the athletes, so they play a softer cushion and give up a lot underneath so not to get beat vertically. Just so happens against Florida State, they still so much man-to-man coverage and get burned for it a lot, and Miami was able to exploit that. Will Georgia Tech fall into that category, or will they be more more aggressive with mixing zones and doing different things and, you know, trying to make plays after the catch? And that'll be interesting from an X's and O's standpoint, Miami's offense versus Georgia Tech's defense.
The point about Miami, you know, how well they can handle success. You know, we see an example of Oklahoma State not handling success well. And I'm just wondering, the fact that they had 10 days to digest this probably makes that whole issue moot, wouldn't you think?
Well, it depends. It can go either direction. Yeah. It can either allow you to get your mind set and back right and focused on the game, or gives you more time to be around people who are telling you how great you are every single day. So, you know, it really does. It can go one of two ways.
A problem you and I both have. Yeah.
Yes, every single day. You have pats on the back. Yes, and they're just constantly praising us. So, no, I do think Randy Shannon has this program, no question, heading in the right direction. And there's more discipline now than there has been in many, many years. And I don't foresee that being a problem. But the bottom line is Georgia Tech's a heck of a football team.
Yes.
On both sides of the ball, they have talent, and it's going to be a tough challenge. And I think the winner of this, you have to pinpoint and say, okay, this is the team to beat now in the ACC.
Well, and the other thing, yeah, we go into the Florida State game with Miami saying that those first four games, gee, if they win two, well, that's really a springboard. And now it's almost, and again, the other two games, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma.
Right.
Yeah. You know, now if they win too, it's sort of a sigh of, oh well. You know?
Right.
I mean, it's amazing what one play against your arch rival can do.
One play. And then also Oklahoma, I think now not nearly as feared in terms of the opponent. Now, still, Oklahoma is absolutely good enough. We don't know. Sam Bradford could be back at that point. We don't know. But, right now you look at this stretch, the next three games, and now all of a sudden you say, well, we'd love to win two out of the next three, you know, and so 3-1 now becomes the bar versus 2-2.
Exactly, exactly. So that game again, Thursday night, 7:30 on ESPN. We wanted to bring up, move now to a game Saturday afternoon, not on ESPN, on NBC at 3:30. Michigan State, Notre Dame, two just wrenching last minute losses. Saturday, Michigan State at home to Central Michigan. And Todd, you have not heard joy and excitement until you're sitting in the Big House press box as Central Michigan kicks a field goal in those crazy circumstances. And then to hear the score announced at the Big House and to hear the roar.
Right.
Yeah, it was a wonderful place to be. But just two wrenching losses. And all of a sudden, these teams got to win Saturday.
There's no question. And, you know, if you want to do the old comparison of which coach needs it more, it's Charlie Weiss.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be the make or break game of his coaching career at Notre Dame. You really look at it.
Wow.
I hadn't
thought of it, but you're right.
If they start the season 1-2, losing to Michigan and Michigan State, you know, it's going to be hard to recover. And I'm not saying he's going to be fired right away, but it's going to be very difficult for him to recover and to regain the confidence of anyone around that program. And I think the players feel that pressure as well. And the problem is this Michigan State team, everyone looks at it and says, well, they lost to Central Michigan. They're good.
Yeah.
I went back and watched that game because I remember watching it. You know, you're in the studio and there's eight games going on at the same time. And the whole time I just felt like Michigan State was a better team and that they had outplayed them. And I went back and watched the tape. And they are the better team, and they outplayed them, but they made some bad mistakes at the end, and they had a couple coverage breakdowns. Guys just didn't make plays on the ball and had chances to on jump balls. There were just four or five things that jumped out, and even before the onside kick and the two chances at the game-winning field goal. But Michigan State has playmakers. They have two quarterbacks, and it's not your typical, well, you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. They have two quarterbacks that can play. Kirk Cousins, I was impressed with. Nichols, the transfer from Oklahoma, is a mobile quarterback that brings a little bit of a spark. And Blair White at wide receiver is a playmaker. Gant, their tight end, does a great job of getting down the middle. They can keep up with Notre Dame. The question is, can Notre Dame get back its confidence offensively and take advantage of a defensive back seven in Michigan State that's okay, but I think got exposed at times by Dan LeFever a week ago?
Well, I would defend Charlie in this way, and I've made this point on the site this week. First of all, the 34 points and 490 yards of total offense. Second of all, this was Charlie Weiss at his play calling best. He never let the Michigan defense get comfortable. And I say play calling best. I still think the two passes on the last possession were, it's inexcusable. It was just
right.
a brain freeze. And it gave Michigan the two timeouts at the end. And that's been discussed ad nauseum. But I don't think the fact that the offense played as well as it did should be, I think he deserves credit for that. I think this is a Notre Dame team that's better than it was a year ago.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
And they played well enough to win.
Yes.
About, 50 minutes of that game. They just, here's the thing that I saw when I went back and watched the penalties. The worst times, penalties, and some, a couple of them were holdings, multiple holding calls that just kill drives. And then they had two times where they had delay of games, which, whether it's Clausen or Charlie Weiss and the staff, whatever it is, they've got to get that buttoned up. They had another illegal procedure play where, a wrong formation, and that was another penalty that set back a drive. So they're little things that can be cleaned up. The talent's there, though. I can't think of, and I've spent the last couple of days looking around the country, I can't think of a trio of pass catchers I would want more if I was Jimmy Clausen than the one he has. Because you have an absolute vertical playmaker in Michael Floyd.
Yes.
Golden Tate, who comes up with a lot of big catches and isn't afraid to go over the middle. And then Kyle Rudolph at tight end is probably the best tight end that no one's really talking about in the country yet.
Absolutely.
But a year from now, he's going to be, the preseason All-American, a guy who just makes plays down the middle. So I think they have weapons galore. Their offensive line's done a better job. Armando Allen at
nice
running back,
game.
Catching
yeah.
the ball, running
yes.
the ball. I mean, they played a really good game offensively. Outside of the penalties and mistakes. And so you're right. It's hard to look at this program and say they're not much improved from a year ago because I think that's the case, but it's a bottom line business. And here
yes.
we go. I mean, if you're 1-2, again, it's going to be real tough to turn around. I do think Notre Dame will win. I think getting back at home, I think the team's focused, but they're not going to win easy. It's going to be a tough ball game.
And, we've all talked about he's got to win, he's got to be 9-3. If you're 1-2 and you got SC out there,
right.
it leaves
There's
you no
three.
Margin of error.
There's
yeah.
your three most likely. But, and again, the knee-jerk reaction, too. They lost to a pretty good Michigan team on the road in the last seconds in a game that they probably should have won. And they still, if you look at the schedule, should go 10-2. If you really break it, they should lose to USC. I'm not saying they will, but they should win every other game. They'd probably be favored in every other game. If they go 10-2, they're going to a BCS Bowl. And
yeah.
that's a big jump from a year ago.
Yeah.
And so there's still a lot to be gained for Notre Dame.
Well, I admire your faith in, them being favored at Pitt. And, I'm hoping they won't be favored at Stanford, but that's purely selfish on my part.
We'll leave that out of there.
This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Want to remind you, don't miss college football on ESPN Radio this Saturday with ESPN Radio's College Game Day at noon and kickoff for West Virginia at Auburn, which begins at 7 p.m. Eastern live from Jordan-Hare Stadium. That's college football on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. Todd, a game Saturday at ABC, a rematch that I guess should have more sizzle to me. I don't feel that sort of rematch revenge type atmosphere about this Texas Tech visit to Texas. And I don't know whether it's because the Red Raiders have lost so much or the fact that it's earlier in the season. We really don't know what they have. And Taylor Potts has looked good. Do you sense this will be any kind of game at all?
That's why I don't think this is getting much of the hype. I don't think that anyone nationally expects this to be a good game.
Yeah.
Texas Tech has done traditionally a great job of keeping games close or pulling off the upsets against some of the top teams when in Lubbock. Now you go on the road where they've been blown out a lot, in Oklahoma and, Norman and Austin and some of the bigger venues in the Big 12. I think the quarterback position, certainly it's a step down, Taylor Potts, but he's played well enough. I think the big thing is that the Michael Crabtree and the offensive weapons, just looking at it big picture, how are they going to be able to go into Austin and beat a Texas team that hasn't necessarily looked it the first 2 weeks, but could be better than the Texas team from a year ago that was a couple plays away from going and playing in the Big 12 championship and probably the national championship game. So I think that's why it's not getting the attention. But, you know, game day is going to be there. Colt McCoy, you know, still probably the Heisman front runner right now with Tim Tebow. And there's a lot to be excited about. And you know Mike Leach is going to have something up his sleeve offensively. The big question to me is, when you go back and look a year ago, is Texas Tech going to be able to pull off what it did the first half and maybe most of the first three quarters defensively against Colt McCoy? And I thought that Ruffin McNeil had a great defensive game plan when I went back and looked at it. He rushed 3 and 4 at the most, generally, because he knew that Colt McCoy's two biggest strengths were throwing underneath, getting the ball out underneath to Shipley on those crossing routes and Quan Cosby and those guys. And then his other strength, obviously, is running the ball. By dropping 7 and 8 into coverage, he was able to use his own coverage that kept all the defenders looking at McCoy, and it limited McCoy's ability to run the ball. And then, secondly, he made McCoy throw the ball down the field, which he's not great at doing. And that's a big question mark in McCoy's game. Now, they made some adjustments, the Longhorns did, and were able to move the ball in the second half. But I wonder if they'll be able to kind of rekindle that spark defensively and get the emotion going the way they had it that night in Lubbock. It's going to be tough to do.
Is it with Colt throwing downfield, is it strength? Is it accuracy?
His arm's adequate. It's more the accuracy and mechanics. I mean, when I watch him, he short strides. And for those who aren't familiar, he doesn't really step through a lot of his throws. He's short strides. So what happens is your arm, instead of coming over the top, comes out three quarters sometimes. And he tries to push it, and I think that leads to a lot of his balls sailing down the field. And especially when he's in the pocket, he's at his best when he's out and moving around and can find a guy and make a quick throw, you know, somewhere 15 yards or within. But when he's got to stay in that pocket, read over, you know, bigger offensive linemen down the field and make accurate throws, it's just not his strength. And that's something I expect Texas Tech to try to do. But this year we've seen him get the ball out quicker. He's got a lot better receivers in terms of yards after catch. And I think that, you know, even John Childs, the old quarterback, they've moved to wide receiver, big play last week against Wyoming after the catch. And I just think his receivers this year are going to provide more in that department, which will make Colt better.
The other point I would make about Colt, Mack Brown made this point this summer, that the biggest game on Colt's schedule is this one.
Yep.
Because he grew up in West Texas, and everybody he grew up with goes to Texas Tech, and that he puts more pressure on himself about this game than he does Oklahoma or anybody else.
Which can work for you or can backfire.
Yeah.
And I think last year, that wasn't necessarily the reason, but Colt didn't seem like himself. He seemed
tense. He scuffed along.
Yeah, he just never got, I shouldn't say never, not until the second half did he get into a rhythm, and at that point it became too late.
It became too late. So that game, Saturday night, 8 Eastern on ABC. I want to bring another night game into the mix, and it's one of 7 ranked teams this week playing on the road against unranked opponents. Friday night, 9:00 Eastern ESPN, a whack, big whack game. Number 10 Boise State at Fresno State. And of course, I saw Boise beat Oregon, really impressed with the defense. Fresno played a very good game at Wisconsin last week, a classic Pat Hill, you know, stretching a AQ team to its limit.
Right.
How do you see this game?
Well, Fresno should have won that game.
Yes.
You know, they, to be honest, they looked like the better team. They seemed to have better athletes on the perimeter. I will say this name wrong probably, but Shayi Ejiratutu is a receiver that you shouldn't try to pronounce, but you should definitely watch. Number two. I'm going to call him number two because he's a playmaker. I mean, he was turning corners around for Wisconsin, getting open down the field. He had a big game, and the quarterback, Ryan Colburn, did a nice job of finding him. First-year starting quarterback, really took advantage of Ejiratutu and his vertical ability. That's something Boise's going to have to watch out for. But Boise's just got so many weapons, and they can beat you in so many different ways. They play hard defensively. They get solid quarterback play, smart decision-making, spread the ball around. And it's going to be tough. I know it's at Fresno, and I know Fresno's good enough, but Fresno makes so many mistakes throughout a game that comes back to just haunt this program. And I think against a buttoned-up Boise State team, it's going to be very tough, very difficult to get away with those mistakes.
Yeah, Boise does not beat itself, generally.
No.
Yeah, absolutely not with Chris Peterson. Among those other games of ranked teams on the road, one that jumps out at me only because of what happened with Cal last year at Maryland and number 8 Cal going to Minnesota Saturday. And it's a noon Eastern, 11 o'clock Central, 9 a.m. body clock time for the Bears.
Nobody likes Cal, man. I mean, the scheduler, they love to every year Cal gets stuck with a 9 a.m. game, essentially, in their mind. I mean, you're right. It was Maryland a year ago. Yeah. They got stuck there. It's just, think about it, you know, in your everyday life, when you go to work and whatever you do, if you all of a sudden 3 hours earlier than you ever, most of the time, probably 6 hours earlier than you're used to getting in the office, how are you going to feel if you got to be in there 6 hours earlier than that moment? It's just, and that's what has happened to Cal before. So this is a tricky game because Minnesota has offensive weapons and, you know,
I love Eric Decker.
Eric Decker does a great job in terms of using his size and physical ability and muscling guys around. And I don't think Minnesota pulls it off, but I didn't think Maryland was going to pull it off a year ago. And Cal has lost to inferior opponents on the road, especially in those early times. And this is going to be, I think this will be a great test to see if Kevin Riley and this Cal team is for real. Because, you know, they haven't had the leadership the last, you know, few years to get over the hump and become a legitimate contender in the Pac-10. They've had the talent at points, and I think they have enough talent now in a Pac-10 that's kind of wide open. And as good as USC is, it's not as dominant a program as it has been in past years. USC's vulnerable. Can Cal take advantage? And I think this will be a good window into what kind of Cal team this is.
Especially with USC going to Cal in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
And the other one I wanted to ask you about while we're out on the West Coast, number 17, Cincinnati at Oregon State, a classic Oregon State game last week, struggling early in the season against an inferior opponent, and then they tune up the engine and go. I mean,
it's been really how this program has gotten it done in the second half of the season, and you know, Mike Riley might be the most underrated coach in the country.
No question.
Every year, he gets the most out of this program from a talent standpoint. And, you know, if you're every 1 year could be a fluke, but every year, if your team's getting better as the season progresses, that means you're coaching them well. I mean, bottom line, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. But this is, I'm almost in love with Cincinnati as a football
team
after Rutgers. I mean,
I fell for them.
How do you not? Yeah. Tony Pike. And I'm mad at myself with Tony Pike because I didn't see enough of it last year. You know, they had injuries at quarterback and moving parts all around, but Tony Pike is 6'5". He's listed at 6'6". I think he's legitimately over 6'5", 225 pounds. Smart decisions, accurate thrower, adequate to good arm strength, spraying the ball around the field against a pretty good Rutgers defense, and, you know, it just is so efficient as a quarterback. I think this guy can play in the NFL, and you know, in the short term, I think he has a chance to give Cincinnati another run at a BCS bowl. I think Cincinnati gets the win at Oregon State. I think if it would play later in the year, as we were talking about, and Oregon State, some of its young players were ready to go. But I think Cincinnati is fine-tuned right now. Obviously, the big question defensively, do they have enough to slow down the Rodgers brothers and you know, some of the potent weapons that Oregon State has? But I like Cincinnati in this game.
I just want to point out we're not completely ignoring games such as Tennessee at Florida and number 19 Nebraska at number 13 Virginia Tech. Those games will be broken down by the ESPN.com bloggers Chris Lowe and Heather Denich on Fridays.
Beano Cook told me I wasn't allowed to talk about those
games. That's right. But we are going to have you put on your Beano hat now for a couple of we answer emails and we got an email from a reader that wanted Beano and I to give our opinions on this. And
these tend to be more historical, right?
Generally, yeah, but not this one.
Okay, that's good for the listeners.
This is from Brian Nelson, and he and his buddies are trying to plan a doubleheader weekend, a travel going to more than one game in a weekend. And the options, it's impressive. It's aggressive. And here are the options. Next weekend, the September 24th, Thursday night, Ole Miss at South Carolina, and then on Saturday, going to either Iowa at Penn State or Miami at Virginia Tech.
Well, let me just say that, first of all, it has to include an SEC game, ideally an SEC night game.
Okay, he also has Florida, Kentucky on this one. So
Kentucky doesn't have the true SEC feel. I mean, South Carolina.
If you start out, Ole Miss, South Carolina. Thursday
Ole Miss, South
night.
Carolina. Is, yeah. I mean, that's a good time. It's a big travel. The better game is at Penn State, it sounds like, but
that would be tough.
Virginia Tech, Blacksburg's a great place. I mean, it's not going to be the best night of your life, you know, party-wise or social scene, but this seems like a business trip. This is a football business trip, and if you're looking for the best two environments, I think South Carolina and Virginia Tech and Blacksburg.
Okay.
But go ahead, there's more options, right?
The second option is the following week, Thursday, October 1st, Colorado at West Virginia.
No, thanks. Unless you're into burning couches and bad football team. Bad football team on the road.
Yeah. Friday night, Pitt at Louisville, which is right down the road, sort of from Morgantown, but not really. And then Saturday, you've got Florida State at BC, or Michigan at Michigan State, or Auburn at Tennessee, or LSU at Georgia. Now, I don't know how he's getting tickets to all these things, but I guess that's what StubHub is for.
Yeah, I mean, LSU at Georgia is the best game so far.
Yeah.
Of all the ones. So if you can tie anything to LSU Georgia, it's a good experience.
Okay. And then the third option, he wheels all the way down to the last weekend in October, the Saturday the 24th, Thursday night the 22nd, Florida State at North Carolina, followed by Saturday either Penn State. No, he says they think they can do Penn State at Michigan and Iowa at Michigan State.
Oh, come on. That's just too much. Yeah. That's not even fun at that point. You can't even enjoy. You've got to be able to go somewhere and at least
tailgate.
Yeah,
okay,
get the
atmosphere.
And who's going to be ready to drive from Ann Arbor to East Lansing? I wouldn't be.
No, good point. Good point. You'd have to have a driver. So
I don't know if we answered that, but I know I wouldn't take that last trip.
Okay. So there you go, Brian. Good luck. Send us a postcard. finally, the Hall of Fame birthdays this week. And they were both yesterday, which is September 15th. Chick Harley, the first Ohio State All-American from the right around the World War One era.
I was going to say, he's not on my radar.
You missed him. And then also Dan Marino.
I got him.
Yeah, you got him. So Dan Marino sharing that September 15th birthday. And the biggest reason I brought up Chick Harley is that one of the great fans of Ohio State football was James Thurber, who the writer, the humorist.
Yep.
And Thurber wrote about Chick Harley, and this is a favorite quote of Dan Jenkins, and he will quote Thurber from memory. He says, "If you never saw Chick Harley run with the football, words cannot describe. It wasn't like Grange or Harmon or anybody else. It was kind of a cross between music and cannon fire, and it brought your heart up under your ears."
Wow.
Yeah. We don't get a whole lot of that writing anymore.
No.
And I'm probably partly responsible for that. But wonderful description of Chick Harley.
It's pretty impressive.
Hall of Fame birthday, September 15th. So, Todd, that's it. Any closing thoughts for this weekend as we get ready for week three?
Well, first of all, I learned something here today. I mean, that's nice.
All right.
When you can, impart some knowledge, but also learn something, the Chick Harley conversation. I'll be interested. The thing I'm most interested to see this weekend is BYU, Florida State. I think this is going to be the first time that, at least in my memory, a Florida State program is going to go and be outclassed by better athletes, better playmakers against a BYU program. I think that man-to-man coverage has been a problem of Florida State's for years now. They don't have the personnel to do it. This is not the 1980s. And I think that Max Hall, with all those weapons, Dennis Pitta, McKay Jacobson, Harvey Unga, all the way down, I think that they're going to exploit this defense. And I think it'll be a sign of Florida State and the sign of the times and needing to kind of transition and become more modern on the defensive side.
Well, that's, it's a huge reputation game for BYU, because even though Florida State may not be Florida State anymore, I think in the minds of the college football fans, if BYU beats Florida State, it even more legitimizes them.
No question. And I'm talking negatively about what the weakness is for Florida State. They were, and as much positive we're talking about Miami, they are one catch, a relatively easy catch away from beating Miami in that opener, and the whole script could be flipped right at this point. So if they beat Florida State, it will be an impressive win, and that will give them two legitimate wins against Big Six conference teams, and then all of a sudden you have to start really considering them a contender for the national title game.
Well, and that you anticipated my next question. We're not just talking at this point being a BCS team. We're talking about getting to the Rose Bowl on January 7th.
Right, and Mel Kiper and I asked in the preseason if a school from a non-Big Six conference would ever get in the national championship game. My answer was absolutely not. Mel agreed, absolutely not. And here we are, 4 weeks later, and now I'm thinking, poof, they got a pretty good chance.
And it's the silver anniversary of their national championship in 1984, so there's going to be a lot of talk about BYU if they win from here on out. That's Todd McShay. This is Ivan Maisel. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.